So basically, this is the last class in Death and Rebirth.
Basically or definitely?
So sad. This is one of my favorite modules. But next is Karma. So that's, you know, equally as exciting. And we do start that on September 13th. So we will take a 1 week break for Labor Day, and then we'll start back up with Karma on the 13th. And that session, or that module, is 6 sessions. So it goes through October 18th. But in the meantime, as many of you have heard me say, my favorite place on the Kadampa Center website is the calendar. So go to that calendar button in the upper right-hand corner, and it will, you know, show you all the amazing things that are happening at the center, whether virtually or in person. So much is happening. Everything from, you know, meditate. This Saturday is the first Saturday of the month meditation. There are weekday meditations. There are Tara practices. I'm opening the calendar now. The list just goes on and on. So definitely check that out, and feel free to, you know, investigate if you have never been to any of those other things that Kadampa Center offers. And let's see here. Looks like we could probably go ahead and get started now. Oh, Steve disappeared while I was...
Well, I'm trying to get out of the shadows. Keep talking.
The lighting on Zoom is always tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. And then for those of you that are interested, there is the new class Exploring Buddhism, and that starts this Thursday the 2nd. I did check about whether or not we can take Discovering Buddhism and Exploring Buddhism concurrently, and the answer was like, no, not really. We would rather you complete Discovering Buddhism before you jump into Exploring Buddhism, because it is a bit, you know, at a more in-depth level. But if, you know, you've done Discovering Buddhism and this is maybe your second or third or fourth round of Discovering Buddhism, maybe concurrent wouldn't be so bad. But that's, you know, that's just what I'm saying. So anyway, any questions about anything before we get started? No? Okay. So as soon as Steve is back, we'll get started. I think she's trying to get her lighting correct.
I had to.
There you are.
All right.
So,
yeah, I guess some people just didn't want this class to die, right?
No pun intended. Or actually pun intended.
Pun intended. So, so yeah, usually the last class, if we're at the center, I'd bring like some candy or some drinks or something, non-alcoholic drinks or something. So feel free to go get something. I'm having a juice spritzer kind of thing. Let's just start by, you know, doing a short meditation to set our intention and to just settle in and relax a bit. So get in a good position for meditation, remembering that it's most important to have your spine straight, chin tucked, tongue at the back of your teeth, front teeth, eyes a little bit open, gently closed so some light comes in and keeps you awake. Arms out away from your side so it doesn't collapse your breathing. You can have your hands in the typical mudra for meditation, or just, you know, on your knees. And then with each exhale, try to release any stress or discomfort or fatigue or worry. See it go out of you in the form of thick black smoke, just out of the solar system and dissolving into outer space. And then inhaling pure white, crystalline, perfect, enlightened energy. And let that fill every cell in your body. And it expels then the tired, negative, stressful energy. And just do that for a while. As you let go of anything that you regret from the day or irritated you today, when you inhale, imagine the energy filling you is full of support for you, compassion, forgiveness, love, and then again releasing all of your own self-judgment, fatigue, worry. And as you fill with the positive, imagine how this also benefits people around you. The people you know, the people you don't know. The ways that you don't even know how it will affect others. Just try from like a bird's eye view to see how this positive feeling that you're generating will help anybody around you as well. Has the potential to. So then as we set our intention, we're including ourselves. We're starting with ourselves. So that as we achieve the goals, the Dharma goals, for more wisdom, more compassion, more patience, more love, more deep understanding, as we achieve these for ourselves, they will definitely benefit those around us. So we try to increase our intention in that way. Making a strong wish to free ourselves from the prison so that we can hold the gate open for others. We can help them escape as well. So then, Linda, would you read the Four Immeasurables once, please?
Sure.
May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies.
So when it says, you know, may all sentient beings have the happiness that is free from suffering, I don't know if that makes any of you pause and wonder, what is that? Well, that's the state, that's the enlightened state, because we all have happiness now and then, but the happiness that is ever present, free from suffering, it's hard for us to imagine that. But that's the whole point, is to start imagining that. What would it take? So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, I want to know, like, if there's any questions that came up this week. I know some of you might have gone and looked at some of the Robert Thurman videos that I was recommending. Are there any things that are outstanding that you definitely want to make sure that we talk about tonight? Would you put them in the chat, or, you know, raise your hand and ask? So if you put them in the chat, Linda can help me take a look at those. Or if you know something that you'd like to say out loud, please unmute and share it, because I just want to make sure. We're going to kind of summarize some things and we're going to do meditation, but I want to make sure I cover everything. Okay, so I don't see nothing, right, Linda? Oh, yeah, Susie.
Thank you. I listened to all the classes, and the death meditation was very powerful for me. And an obstacle that I had, it seems silly, but when I'm thinking about the stages and I'm listening to the narration and thinking about what's being said, when I lose positive, negative, and neutral, I get kind of stuck because I think, how do you think? How can you do this? Because you can't think.
Well, you still can think. It's when they're saying like, sometimes it's called, you no longer can feel pain, pleasure, or neutrality.
Mm.
And so this is a good question. I read your question in the email, so I was definitely going to cover this. Because I used to get stumped too with like, am I going to remember this exact sequence when I'm dying? And, you know, but I think it's more that if you're aware that, oh, this is what's happening now, even if you remember kind of one of them,
mm-hmm.
then it helps dispel the kind of dreamlike state that you might be caught up in. And so it's a good practice in our waking life and also in our dreams, if you can, to try to create some distance and watch things as in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, not to be so detached, but also not to be so enmeshed, so that when something, you know, right now I have a very complicated thing going on at my job, that I can kind of look at it as though, oh, what if this were a dream? Or if this were a dream, I wouldn't necessarily have to get so caught up in it all. Right, I could still watch and look at it with a little bit of space. That's what we want to be able to do, you know, during the death dissolution process, so that we're not just swept up in like these things that we might be feeling. So I mentioned this before, and I hope it makes sense to you all. Like, haven't you ever? I said this a couple of times, and it's hard on Zoom, but like, you know, have you ever had a dream? Have ever had something that's influencing your dream? Like the first time I wore my Fitbit to sleep, I dreamt that a dog was biting my wrist, right? Because I'm not used to sleeping with something enormous on my wrist. And so the mind tries to make sense of some sensation that you're having. And that's my understanding of the death dissolution state. So when we talk about one of the first early stages, it feels like your arms and legs are falling. But you're not completely, you know, you're not like in this state of mind. So your mind might try to make sense of that by creating like a dreamlike state of that you are falling, or that your arms are under some dirt or something like that. And you create this whole scenario. But if you're able to catch it and, oh, there's these other signs too, I've started the death dissolution process, then you might not be caught up in like thinking that this is real, that your arms and legs, that you're falling. You might be able to create a little distance and watch it and go, I know that you know, mirage is here and smoke is coming. And so you know that this isn't permanent. This is a stage. Just like if I had realized this was a dream, I'd say, oh, that's not really a dog biting my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's part of why we do the death dissolution stage, is to kind of know that when we're in them, we don't get caught up into like a nightmare kind of thing. We can create some distance. And actually, it's what you want to be able to do is to recognize them. Then they don't have to have that kind of out of control feeling. They can be like you're waiting for that moment of that clear light where you're able to join whatever mind that you understand about emptiness with this emptiness that actually appears. So, you know, from what I understand from Geshe, that moment of clear light will appear to any sentient being at the moment of death, but it's going to be like nothing for like a cat. But for a human who's been practicing and waiting for this and understands this, that's where they can rest their mind. It's called the child light and the mother light joining. So the mother light being emptiness itself. So emptiness is a huge topic. It's not easy to describe. We've talked a little bit about it. And there's some analogy I was going to... Well, I mean, first of all, I think the entry point into studying emptiness is meditations on impermanence. Okay, so that's an easy way just to see that things are not as solid and real as we think they are. That's the very kind of gross level. that we, that's the meditation we did last week, where we looked at a building or a place and we saw all the different iterations of it. And there's no one iteration that we can grab onto and say, that's going to stay like that, right? Everything is like in flux. Everything is fluid, but that's still on a really gross material level. And so in Buddhism, we're also looking at states of consciousness and the subtlest consciousness that makes up the aggregates that are in flux. So our aggregates have been, you know, constantly changing, right? And when I've talked a lot about the river, this is another way to start to enter into what is emptiness. Because it's not that we don't exist, it's that things don't exist in the way we think they do. And that we, you know, it just kind of comes with our limited view to see things as existing from their own side. So I have a couple of examples. Like, you know, when we talked about the river that you would see when you're looking down the through the buildings in New York, right? You see a piece of the East River and it looks like, oh, there's a lake down there, because that's all that you can see. And then you might, if you did some kind of analysis of it, you might see the river's always flowing in one direction and a boat comes in and goes out and you're like, maybe that isn't a lake. That's what, you know, you can do in Buddhism to kind of see that, is this it? Is this it? My consciousness right now. This is the relative self, no doubt. And this is what, again, we were beginning to talk about last week, is the difference between the relative self and the ultimate self. So, you know, there's the conventional self and the ultimate self. And the ultimate self, in our analogy with the river, would be the river, which the little piece of lake might never really experience that much, but might get little glimpses of. And, you know, one of the reasons we do the death dissolution state is because of that moment of when the clear light arises, we have more of a chance to experience that and stay in that kind of meditative state. And in meditation, you know, there are people who get to that state. So, you know, just like the river, we can look at the river, we can put a boat on the river functions as a river. It's a river. But it's not existing all from its own side. It has all these components to it, these aggregates to it. It also arises based on conditions, causes and conditions. And that's what we talk about a lot when we're exploring emptiness, but also reincarnation. And so karma and emptiness should go hand in hand when you're looking at them, because one won't make sense without the other. But all those conditions came together to create something that we can all agree is the Mississippi River. It functions as a river, just like you function as a person. So things not existing from their own side, things come into existence. This is the good news. Things come into existence based on causes and conditions. Therefore, being the keeper of the river in this lifetime, you have the ability to put things in that river, because enlightenment doesn't happen without a cause. And that's one of the fundamental things in Buddhism. Now, no doubt, you don't have to believe in reincarnation, and you can use any part of Buddhism to help you in your life and with your other own religion. There's no, you know, there's no pressure to like, hey, you got to believe this. But you should also kind of become familiar with the logic and the thinking that Buddhists use. And I, you know, I'm just teeny tiny little voice in that. There's other people, some of you, you know, study with or have listened to Venerable Ravina. So she'd be a really good person to listen to in terms of karma. As well as the next DB teacher and Robert Thurman, and just keep, you know, keep thinking about it and keep playing with it, because it should be, as I said in the very first class, something that empowers you, not something that frightens you or makes you feel, you know, like a leaf in the wind or something like that. Far from it. It should make you feel empowered. And of course, there's people who are going to misuse it. But so I did not grow up in a religious household at all. My mother is ex-Catholic, and So, you know, I remember it was in third grade before we were in New Orleans where everybody is Catholic or Baptist, and I was nothing, which is not a good deal back in the 60s. So these kids were tormenting me that I was going to hell, and I had said something, and they understood then that I didn't know their language, and they said, "Don't you know who Jesus is?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I know he's dead. He died on the Red Cross." And people are collecting money for him. That's all I knew. there's a story that I really love, a Christian story that I think emphasizes, it talks about kind of causes and conditions and emptiness. And that's the story, if I have it right, where, this is the Virgin I heard. You know, Jesus is walking somewhere and somebody touches his robe, right, and they get healed. And then Jesus says to this person, you know, it was your faith that healed you. That's emptiness. That's causes and conditions. Because another person walking by Jesus doesn't even know who he is and just walks right by and isn't healed. Another person hates his guts and wants to kill him. So this healing ability is not coming 100% from Jesus' side. It's coming, you know, the joining together of this person who sees something that the other people aren't seeing, and this person who's holding something that other people aren't holding. So in Buddhism, it's all about, you know, you may have already heard lots of analogies about trying to clean the window or clean the mirror. So that's your job, is to clean that as much as you can so that the view is different than the view of somebody, you know, who in the scenario I was just giving you would not be touched or healed or helped. That's on you. It's not about waiting for somebody else to come and do it. You have the ability to do it. And that's also a perfect example of creating the causes of things being impermanent. So because things are impermanent, that person had reached a certain level where his faith could heal him. Does that make sense? That kind of stuff makes sense. So like when you're looking at, you know, what happens after I die, and this, because my window is so cloudy, I don't see like ever being in the Bardo state before, previous lives or anything like that. I don't see that. Many of us don't. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, but so I was listening to Robert Thurman talk to people who were like, "Oh, there's just nothing after death." And he said, "Okay, so show me, if we're trying to prove things, then prove to me that there's nothing. So where is this nothing that you're going to be able to join with?" Because that's a really critical thing, and there should be as much, there's so much kind of concern about proving reincarnation, but can you also prove nothingness? That's even harder to prove, actually. So if you can prove nothingness to me, then I'll know that that's what you're going to join when you die. But you can't point to it. You can't find it because nothing by definition is nothing. But I know it's complicated. I know it's not so easy. I think it's such an important part of Buddhism because of the continuity of consciousness is an important thing. And so last week I said this one thing that I want to go back to because Buddhists have very logical arguments about reincarnation. And one of the key ones that I thought I talked with Geshe about this week too is that when you're really studying deeply into mind and mental factors and consciousness and all of this, one of the foundational principles is that, you know, only like produces like. So when you're looking at karma and when you're looking at what produces what, I think I said last week, you know, a horse doesn't produce a tree. You know, like produces like. And so then you look at the nature of the mind. It's connected to this physical brain and this physical body, but the mind is bigger than that. And so what makes up the mind, aside from just the brain? We know it's more than the brain. So, you know, I think in the very first module, it talks about the mind is clear, right? Clear perceiver. So then that's what produces mind, It's that kind of clarity and awareness is what produces the next moment in the river, just like the river, this bend in the river produces the next bend in the river. And what produces this moment is the previous moment. So we can go back to where the very first moment of your official life, for sure, that's the relative self. And so then the thinking is that the previous moments that produce this moment in your consciousness that we could label with your name was another moment of clear consciousness or of consciousness, of clarity. It wasn't necessarily, you know, in this body, this relative body, but that's the subtle consciousness that is part of the river that's now labeled you. All right, so that's my long-winded summary of some of the stuff that we've been looking at. So next module, when you start getting into karma, which can be equally disturbing, and I just want to pass on this one thing that really helped some people I was talking to. I'm from New Orleans, so my mind is a lot in New Orleans right now. And when Geshe-la first came here, I would bring him to New Orleans quite a bit. It was right after Katrina. And we all did that exercise you did last week about meditating on a building. Actually, it was right before Katrina. So we did that meditation quite a bit. And after Katrina, people told me that meditation helped them the most of all the things that we had done. It's just kind of meditating on the impermanence of places and buildings and things and people. But that wasn't why I was bringing it up. Why was I bringing it up? Oh, okay. So we were there. I was there trying to talk about. I was trying to talk about karma. It's such a loaded topic, and that's one where it's really important to remember it's supposed to empower you. It's not about using karma to then say, "Oh, wow, that person's karma must suck," or "I must have done these terrible things." And that's just not what studying karma is about. It's about empowering you to know, "Oh, I have all this ability and power to purify things I regret and work towards things that I want." That's the whole point. But I was telling Geshe-la that people, especially in the West, because we haven't heard about it very much, and it can be disturbing. And I was telling him that people's reaction was, "Oh, you mean I must deserve these terrible things that have happened?" And he said this thing that I always remember. He said, you go back and tell them that everyone deserves enlightenment. That's what we deserve. Don't get caught up in like, "Oh, this happened to me, so I've done..." We're taking it way too personally, like, I did something, and therefore this is happening. It's meant to, even as something negative is happening, to give you a way to view it differently in an empowering way, you know, not in a self-blame. And another way that I look at it, because there's this prayer I do in the morning, which basically I'm confessing to have done, not me personally, but again, this river, every single terrible thing you can possibly imagine anybody ever committing. It's just this heartfelt confession that all these terrible things, I confess them. And all these incredible things that the previous keepers of this river have done, I rejoice in these. That's all. And so if you think like that, like just... that it's just a grab bag now. So I have a handful. If all the karma that I've created, it makes up as many grains of sand in the entire world, right? Then this life is like a handful. It's going to come with a whole bunch of different shit in that handful, some great stuff. It's a grab bag. And then my job is to work with it. It's to work what's in this handful. And that was one of the very first things Geshe-la told me. Okay, he's like, "There's just so much karma. It's hard to get your head around it." There's some sutras that I read sometimes, and they go on for pages and pages of things like this. And first I couldn't understand, why do I have to read pages and pages of the same kind of thing? They're talking about like how much karma there is and how much time in the world there is. And they were saying things like, if a dove took a silk scarf and flew back and forth across the top of a mountain, and finally the mountain was worn down to nothing through this action, that still is not as much time as an eon, and an eon's worth of karma and so on and so forth. So after reading all this, and like as it's tall, there's all these lengths that I don't really know how they're like Yo Johnny's or something, but I think it's like, say, a silo full of sesame seeds. And the amount of time it would take you to take each sesame seed out and then put all those sesame seeds back in, that's still not as much karma or whatever, karma or negative karma or positive karma, whatever you want to fill in the blank, that has been created by you or can be created by you. So, you know, I read this many times, and it, all of a sudden it dawned on me one day that I tend to think of just time, intellectually I get it, but not in my heart, you know, how much time and karma and lives. And after reading this multiple times, it really hit me on a different level. You know, what a little blip we are and how much time we're actually talking about. So it's also, I think, meant to inspire us that you have so much abilities in this little blip of time. You know, that it's so incredibly easy to create amazing karma, you know, just by something you're thinking, just by something you're thinking, just by something you're wishing, that it's so easy to create, to put a whole bunch of seeds out there. Okay, any thoughts or questions about that? All right. It's really, really hard to just yabber away and just feel nothing. So we're going to do this meditation, then I'm going to put you all into a room so you can talk to each other. So get comfortable. This is going to be the death dissolution process. And so I want to say some things preemptively that, well, first of all, if you don't want to do it, you can kind of scoot out and come back in 10 minutes. So that's totally fine. That remember that this is a temporary process of moving through to something hopefully much better, more powerful, right? So it's temporary, like when you fall asleep. When you fall asleep, a lot of these stages happen when you fall asleep. You know, you can't move and you're not going to be remembering things. It's like that. So it brings up feelings of loss, but you're going to be doing this in the best possible frame of mind, this meditation, that you are, you know, so let's do it the best way possible. Let's plant that seed that you are supported, that you're cared for, that you have already glimpsed something wonderful coming around the corner. So this isn't frightening. This is something that you're ready for. You're looking forward to, because you can't wait to experience that kind of clear light that, you know, when people talk about near-death experiences, maybe it's a bit like that, like just this pure, amazing, loving feeling. And if you can catch that moment and rest in that moment, that is going to create your next moment of consciousness. You're going to come into the next life or next place where you go with that, carrying that moment, rather than a fearful, I don't want to go moment. Okay? And that your connections with each other here and the people in your life is also a river. So your connections with the people that you love did not just start out of nothing, because show me where nothing is and then we can agree. But there are causes that created those connections, and you have the ability to put wonderful things into that river so you'll continue with those. All right, so let's get in a comfortable position. And again, imagine your best case scenario. You're in a comfortable bed. There's been people who've been helping you, reminding you to keep your mind calm, that everything is as it should be. Then, in fact, there is no separation. But everything is fine. Everything is as it should be, and you're ready. You're prepared. You've done all you can do. So now with a calm mind, you start to notice that you're on this journey of moving through to the Bardo state. Your body has become thin and weak. Your vision becomes dark and blurry. Your arms and limbs feel like they're falling. You can no longer blink your eyes. Your natural glow has faded. And mirage appears. Mirage is the first sign, and you recognize it, and you know the next sign is coming, the smoke. So mirage is here. None of this is frightening you. You're able to just look at it as though you're watching a movie, as though you're standing and watching a dream without getting caught up in it. So mirage is here and smoke is coming. You can no longer feel pain, pleasure, or neutrality. You no longer remember the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. Your mouth and nose dry and pucker. You can no longer hear internal sounds, the kind of inner humming of the living body. You can no longer hear external sounds. And smoke appears, wisps of smoke. They're not frightening you. You recognize that mirage has gone, smoke is here, and fireflies are coming. You can no longer remember the names of the people in your life. You can no longer remember your relationships. Your breathing becomes jagged and irregular with short inhales and long extended exhales. You can no longer smell. And fireflies, you recognize fireflies as one of the internal signs. Smoke has gone, fireflies are here, and light is coming. You feel calm and ready. You can no longer move your body. You can no longer remember the mundane details of who, why, when, how. You can no longer inhale. You can no longer feel your body. You can no longer have conceptual thoughts at all. You can no longer taste. And a flickering light appears, like candlelight. And then the clear sky, like the autumn sky, the white appears. And then red, like a sunset. And then you lose consciousness for a second as though you fainted. And then perfect clear sky arises. with the blue autumn sky everywhere. That's no different from you. And this is the joining of clear light and your consciousness. It's pure bliss. As you're ready, open your eyes. So was that a different experience than the first time we did this? Was it a little more positive? Or did you all notice anything different for yourselves during this one?
For me, it was very peaceful this time.
Oh, good. So if there's no questions, I want to ask Linda to put everybody in groups of three. And what I'd like you to do is just share and hear what some of your other experiences were, questions that people may have about it. But what were some of your experiences? If you've done this a couple of times, do you notice anything changing, anything different? Okay. And then we'll come back in like 10 minutes. Did Michael have a room?
What's that, Steve?
Did you assign him to a room?
Yes, he hasn't joined yet.
Okay. He might have taken a break.
And it looks like I can't do simple math.
I clicked the not, so I don't know how to. I don't know how to get back to where I can.
Oh, I might be able to.
Oh, here it is. I've got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Wait, I always have to go like, okay. Well, why is my voice so weird here? I don't know. Everybody else's lighting looks normal, and my lighting is just so...
I don't know. I mean, on my laptop view, so I have my iPad sitting here, and it looks a lot clearer and brighter on the iPads for some reason, and it looks a little grainy on my laptop, but I don't know why.
Yeah. How many people are on YouTube?
There's three, well, and I'm on there, so two, really.
Okay. So if you're on YouTube, yeah, you might jot down some notes for yourself, you know, about, because sometimes, I mean, this happens to me a lot in meditation. You know, I'll have an experience there that I'll want to remember, but because I didn't write it down, then, you know, the left part of my brain just takes over and I kind of forget. So take this time to, you know, write down any thoughts that you were having during that, or any parts of the meditation that were harder or easier. Want to run to the restroom, Linda? So when does the next class start? It's like after the one after Labor Day?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so the 13th, and it's Karma, and Dawn will be teaching.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And when does Venerable Tendrin's class start? Or did
it's Thursday, start? Like, yeah, the 2nd.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, I'll be right back.
Okay.
Maybe I should turn off my... So, Linda, I mean, since this is one of your favorite classes, is there anything that you would like to cover before we end it? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. No, not really. I just find this subject very fascinating. And and especially so now, my mom and I, about, I don't know, less than a year ago, 10 months ago or so, joined households. And so I now live with my 80-year-old mom, and you know, it's just very interesting, and you know, because of her age and health, it's just on my mind, you know, all the time. Especially now, even though probably I understand intellectually it should be on my mind anyway, but it's more so now. And I just really find it, you know, so interesting. Like, the death dissolution and, you know, what happens next. And I love the way you explain how, you know, you're kind of the keeper of this consciousness now. I think a lot of people, myself included, when I first got into booze, this Linda is going to continue, and that's not really, and then followed by Karma, it's like, great.
right. I don't know if it would be better to have it first or what, but you're always tying things in together, because they all overlap, so you can't really separate them out.
Right. When you were gone, I put in the chat that emptiness is module 12. And so even though that's, you know, the second to the last module, emptiness is intertwined in all of the modules, as is karma. So.
You can't, I mean, I remember when Venerable Rubina came to New Orleans, and she was like, okay, so what's the topic for tonight? And I can't remember what it was. And she goes, oh, yeah, it's always the same thing, just different title. it's always, you know, you might have a little bit of a different slant on it this way or this way, but they're all together, you know.
And I did want to also let you know, a YouTube viewer, Rosemarie, who has joined us on Zoom before as well, said in response to your question on how you felt after the meditation, she said, thank you, I feel peaceful doing it this time.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, I feel like I learn a lot each time too. And like I think we said last time, you know, so I said something about let's start, you know, it's the death you want to have, but now I want to add more things in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of remembering you are peaceful. You are feeling that this is moving in the right direction, you know, that you're not frightened by this process. You know, sometimes, especially when I get to the very end of the meditation, I can get this wonderful feeling of just that sky, like nature of my mind and all this other stuff has settled down. And so if I kind of know in the beginning, hey, that's where I'm headed. Okay. And I also like, when you get past the pain, then you're in the next step with your mouth and nose dry and fucker. Like, who cares?
You know, right. Well, one of the things I got caught up on this time, don't ask me why, was the fireflies. And, you know, here in the United States, fireflies aren't found west of the Mississippi.
Oh.
And I was like, are fireflies in, you know, India? Are they in Tibet? Are they... So I almost hate to even say that out loud because I don't want to put that thought in the head of others.
Yeah, I mean, that may be a translation because I've heard, you know, there's lots of different ways to describe some of these things. So like that smoke, again, it's going to be your dream. So, you know, somebody else may see it, like I've heard it described as like distant campfire.
Mm-hmm.
Or glittering, you know, so it's because it's your mind, you may see that glittering and think, oh, it's like gold out there. Or it's like little lights twinkling in the distance.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I always visualize, but, you know, yeah. Tonight it was like fireflies.
Yeah.
Fireflies
in Tibet. The part of your mind was like, wait a minute, I don't want to do this meditation. Let me pop something in. Yeah, no, that part of our mind is really strong, you know, like, wait a minute. Yeah, we have so many different parts to ourselves anyway. But
well, and honestly, as the program assistant, I don't go really deep into meditation. But,
yeah.
I mean, I might kind of listen, but I'm also watching. I'm looking at YouTube. You know, I'm making sure that someone hasn't joined and are waiting to be admitted. So it's not meditation at its best, for sure.
Right. No, but I'm really glad you said that because I want to point out to people that those things that we're saying
mm-hmm.
are just like a platform because it could show up any way depending mm-hmm. on your mind. But if you recognize that, you know, like a flickering candle might not look like a flickering candle to somebody else, but those are the template
mm-hmm.
of what the stages are. So mirage, you know, it might look just wavy and foggy for somebody else, but it's still, so that's a good thing to know because it's going to be yours. It's going to be your mind is going to say, well, hey, there are fireflies in Tibet. All right. So maybe let them know they've got like a few minutes to kind of wrap up.
Okay. I'll say 3 more minutes.
Because I know that thing, your arms and legs feel like they're falling. Geshe-la's described that as, you know, it's like in dreams sometimes where you feel you're falling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other times it could be, he goes, the person feels like they need to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be that they feel like they're trapped underneath something. That's one mm-hmm. person's vision. Maybe they're trapped under something. Mm-hmm. Somebody else may feel like they're just falling constantly.
Right.
So it's just going to depend on the mind, and if you're prepared for however it may show up, it's all going to have that same kind of component.
Mm-hmm. I had a very big dog, 95-pound dog, George, who lived to be like 16 years old. So that was old for a really big dog, and he died at home one night. Kids were in bed. Royden was out of town. And, you know, I was sitting with him in the living room, but not next to him. I was just in there, just kind of waiting, and his legs were, it was though he was running.
Yeah,
you know, he was like
yeah.
And then that stopped and subsided. Yeah. Yeah, but you could see those stages, you know,
absolutely.
Watching my dog. Yeah.
Absolutely. I saw that with my dog too. She kept trying to get up, and Geshe said, he told me that's what's happening now. Mm-hmm. And then pretty soon she wasn't. And then he was like, okay, just stop putting water. Cause we were just trying to keep her mouth
mm-hmm.
wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my mom was dying, same thing. She was trying to get up. I mean, I saw all the stages
mm-hmm.
and it's, even if it's hard to watch because it's somebody you really care about, it's still, there's something helpful about knowing where they are in the process
mm-hmm.
and what to do. And some people, every stage is different for different people. One stage could last days for one person and 2 seconds for another,
mm-hmm.
Even if they're having the same cause of death, you know, an illness or something.
Do you want me to close out the rooms? They close, you know, yeah. Once I close it, it's a minute, so...
Right, and they can stay longer, and, or they can go right out. I mean, they can stay that full minute if they're
fine. Right. Are you ready for me to close them then?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, what's nice at the center is, like, I can hear what they're saying. I can overhear.
Uh-huh.
So I also know if they're engaged or not. Or if they're
right.
You know, I know how to long to keep it or to bring
the uh-huh.
or their questions that they may have.
Yeah.
It's really hard in Zoom.
Well, I find that in breakout rooms and Zoom or in person, in small groups, the chatter seems to continue.
Yeah.
It's more difficult to rein people back in, I think, than the opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you all have a good chat?
Not everyone's back
so.
Yet.
Good.
See, we still have folks, 3 rooms that aren't ready to come back yet.
Well, we're very obedient, but what I like the most about it is that Michael and Margaret were now people rather than little squares on my screen, and I heard their you know, it's, you can't beat that part of
right. Anything, yeah. I totally agree. Well, that
but I'm still... little square on the screen.
Right now, yeah.
That doesn't change.
But now you're a little
you know,
person
I'm grateful
stuck in there.
Little squares, as much as there's, you know, oh, Zoom can be so frustrating and exhausting. I, the timing of it is just perfect in terms of the pandemic and having this, you know, this technology to communicate and to continue the Dharma stuff. It's, I'm grateful for it.
Is everybody on the
screen? In my little box. That's my little box.
Is everybody here in North Carolina? Raise your hand if you're not in North Carolina.
I think okay. We're all within just a few miles of each other from what we were talking about.
I am missing everyone because I'm...
Hello!
But I do miss all of you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also if you have to, like, I work a lot during the day on Zoom, so like to come and do more Zoom is hard. But it's what I was telling Linda. Sometimes, you know, in the center I can kind of overhear if the conversation's picking up or not, or if there's questions. So now I'm going to rely on you all to kind of report, you know, what the conversation was like, any questions that was left over or got stirred up from your conversations.
We talked a little bit about just the fact that tonight's meditation was maybe more peaceful. I think Gary and I were saying maybe tonight was a little more peaceful for us than the last time. But, you know, there are still things that we're trying to wrap our heads around. And I think it's kind of what you were describing earlier about, like, intellectually I know this, but it doesn't quite resonate in my heart yet.
Yeah. Which part? Which part do you kind of know intellectually but not?
I think it's more about just sort of, you know, reaching an acceptance that these things are real, that this is, these phases are real, and this is how, you know, getting that comfort level of trusting and how this is how it's going to be. This is how it could go down. So to speak.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, one thing that is, I mean, so I've seen several people go through these stages in their death process, and even though it was very painful for me and very hard to watch. I also, it helped me to know the stages, because I could see what stage the person was in and what I felt I needed to do or not do, you know. So, for example, when my mother was dying and she kept trying to get up, then I saw that stage go into something else. And I was trying to keep her mouth kind of moist for a while, but once she got past the point of not feeling any more, feeling anything more, then I didn't feel like I needed to keep doing that. And so then, you know, I've seen these exact stages in my dog and my parents and in somebody else's parents. And so then I have a lot more confidence, though, that, oh, these are the stages. And so that's been helpful for me personally. Linda and I were talking about, too, like not, I wanted to say this because Linda had a question and or comment. And I, when they're talking about these things like wisps of smoke or fireflies or it feels like you're falling, it's going to be your mind. So it could show up a little bit differently, but that's the template that it will be. So it may not, you know, I've heard it also described as like the glittering. You know, so it could be glittering instead of fireflies. Could be like little campfires at a distance. Whatever is culturally and familiar to you, that will be kind of how it shows up. So just to know that those are a template of, that is, those are the stages, but could appear different to those of you. Yeah, Susan.
Quickly, I get a little confused about mirage. Does anybody have something? Yeah. What do you think of?
You know, like when you're driving down a hot highway and you see that kind of like, looks like an ocean, it looks like water. Yeah. John, did you have an example? No, okay. So I think that's what it means. It's like something shimmering
Okay, I understand now. Yeah, I've seen that, but I was thinking, well, I'm not going to be in the desert. I'm not going to be in the ocean or parking lot, but I understand.
Yeah, that's what will be appearing in this state, because you're not going to be seeing the room that you're in. It starts to change because now your eyes aren't blinking, you know, and so you're moving, so you're not seeing things as they are. I know, like when my dad died for like months, he was convinced there were people in the room, and he was talking to people in the room. So that's a real common sign. It was not listed in this, but you know, nobody else was seeing those things. He was seeing them, 100%. He was seeing them. So it's not going to be the same things that we're looking at now. So seeing mirage, you know, a mirage, or just that things are very wavy and kind of dreamlike. So you know, as you do that meditation, fill in what works for you. You know. If it's glittering. But anyway, those are kind of the stages and meant to help familiarize yourself with the process so that it's not panic. And so when you do this meditation, I'm glad that we had another chance to do it because I really wanted to put in there, you feel ready for this. You're looking forward to that amazing feeling of kind of joining that pure sky of emptiness, that these things are not frightening you, that you're able to see it from like the detachment of watching a dream. You can practice all day long just going, is this a dream? You know, let me not get swept up in this feeling. So I do that a lot in my dreams. I actually, wait a minute, is this a dream? And so ever since I was a kid, I can do this. If it's a really, I have these nightmares and I go, wait a minute, okay, I'm just going to jump off this building because I think this is a dream. Now I stopped doing that because I thought, maybe it's not so good to jump off a building. So what I do instead in my dreams, this happens two or three times a year, something terrible is happening, and then I'll just say, if I jump up and I stay up, it's a dream. And sometimes even when I stay up, I go, I don't know, is this really a dream? It feels so real. You know, there's something terrible going on, or I'm really mad or upset, and that feeling is so real, it's hard to believe it's a dream, but yet I'm off the ground. I go, it has to be a dream. So I would just say, like, when I have those dreams, it's because I've been testing reality all day long. I've been trying to jump, actually. You know, I'm walking down the hallway at work and I jump a little bit. It just helps break up the view that everything is as we see it. You know, we're so trained to see things existing in a certain way that we want to be able to challenge that a little bit so that we don't get swept up into like, this is it. This is the version. This is the only version. You know, the meditation where you meditate on, you know, you see somebody coming towards you as a stranger. Okay. Then you see, I mean, you can do it multiple ways, but let's say now you create, what would happen to make this person a really close friend? What would be the things that would create a real close feeling? What would happen? What would they do, that same close person, to make them an enemy? Right? So that you begin to see that it's not coming just from that person, that there are reasons that make that person a friend or an enemy or a stranger. And so that nothing is so, I mean, this helps me when I'm kind of annoyed with somebody, because then I think, what would they do or say, or how that would change all this? And then I can see what I can also do or say, that it's not something I have to just latch onto and go for this ride because they're the best or they're the worst. So same thing, that will help us challenge everything, especially at our moments, our hardest moments, and especially when we're being, when we're in the stages of dying. So, I hope that to see you all at Susie. Go for it.
Okay. When I took this class before, and I think it was with you, it seemed as if the meditation was so much longer.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot more detail, and it bothered me because I thought, I can't remember this, I'm getting confused. Whereas this, I don't know if it was longer, it could have been something I dreamt up, but this really was just what I needed.
Oh, well, good.
Thank you.
I might have described it longer before, but this is the one I've memorized.
Mm-hmm.
I do it like at night. Maybe it's just that you become more familiar with it so that this time around it didn't seem overwhelming.
It could have been when I took it with another teacher. I don't know. This one is just right.
Yeah. And the one that you'll see in the DV material, you know, print that out. And I mean, they break down exactly what's happening. So that's sometimes what makes it more complicated, too, is which element is dissolving into which element.
Right.
And so those are, you know, read that and know it. But then when I'm actually doing it in a meditation, I just want to have the feeling of it. Because mm-hmm. I probably, when I'm dying, I'm not going to go, okay, this is the earth element. I just want to be able to recognize it and not mm-hmm. get caught up in a thing.
I get stuck.
Yeah.
I try to think of everything and it doesn't serve me. So
my advice would be, like, when you're reading the death dissolution states in the DV material, read it for the knowledge of what the elements are and why it's just dissolving into that. And then when you're practicing it, try to have the experience of it. Try to experience what it's like to see that, to feel that, to have this other thing and to remember. Because the only thing you're really supposed to be, I mean, the main thing you're supposed to be doing is like, oh, with those inner signs, like this is mirage and smoke is coming. Those are the more important things to know, like, okay, that's coming and then this is coming and that. But, and if it's overwhelming, don't do it. You know, there's other things to meditate on. If it's helpful, then do it. And definitely have those places in there where you're planting that seed, like, I feel surrounded by love. You know, I am supported here. You know, I'm not frightened. I feel comfortable with where this is going. And anything that you know in particular is an obstacle for you feeling comfortable and loved, now you have the chance to apply antidotes to that. So that at that time, you will feel more secure in your practice and more comfortable with the process. So unless there's any other questions, I look forward to seeing you all at some point soon at the center. Until then, at least we have the technology to meet up like this, and at least I'm not using a cat filter, which that was like the best thing ever during the pandemic. Because I work in the courts, so to watch this lawyer, and I know he was like, you know, if he didn't show up, he'd be in trouble. So he was like, I'm ready to proceed, Your Honor, as a cat. If you haven't seen this, just Google lawyer and cat filter, Zoom cat filter.
I am not a cat, he says.
I'm not a cat. Anyway, thank you all for your patience and your attention and your interest. And I look forward to this, and that's unusual on a Monday night to look forward to Zoom. So let's take a moment to dedicate all the merit that individually and collectively has been created by coming here on a Monday night and working on this difficult topic, challenging ourselves, and the generosity of sharing your information in small groups, your patience. Every minute of doing something like this, as Geshe-la used to tell me, just think how many other people in North Carolina at this moment are working on something like this. And you can rejoice in the fact that you did and you are. And so imagine that merit that you've created. You know, nothing is lost. So that's also something. It's not nothing. So this something you're going to dedicate in the highest way possible so that you can become free of this samsaric prison as soon as possible and help all the others through your example. With your example to embody these teachings and find your way to freedom. Thank you so much. Okay, everybody. See you soon. Take good care. Be safe and healthy. And Linda, any last announcements?
No. Have a great Labor Day, everyone, and I hope to see you the Monday after. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you,
Linda.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
Thank you.
Linda, do they have to sign up somewhere on the DB thing?
No, I think once you're signed up, once you're enrolled, you're enrolled.
Okay. You're a lifer.
Gary, you're muted. What are you saying?
One thing I've noticed is that if I enroll at once this is over, I get everything onto my calendar.
Oh.
Which I don't. So I re-enroll at the end of every one, and then my calendar fills up. Because if I don't fill up my calendar, I forget.
Good tip. I didn't realize that. And absolutely, it doesn't hurt to re-enroll. Go ahead, John.
I just created a recurring calendar mm-hmm. with the same link sort of in perpetuity. And I guess that'll be 2021, and maybe in 2022 there'll be a new link. You know, but I also copied and pasted my login information or the where the resources are on the website too, and that's in my calendar, so I kind of have everything there, and I'll end up making other links.
So organized.
Hey.
Very good. Yeah.
Where I can.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for showing up, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.